Hi. I'm here. I'm behind the podium. I am standing up. Thank you. Robert Reich starts all of his speeches, "Don't worry, I'll be short." Okay. First of all, I have a bumper sticker that says, "Speak the truth even though your voice shakes." So you're going to have to forgive these first 2 minutes because I won't be able to control that part of it. So, I'm Janine Latus. I'm teaching the section on writing for a living. That means I support myself as a writer full time. I don't do graphic design. I don't go to work. I don't teach, except right now. I don't do corporate gigs. I don't have to be anywhere on time, and I am anywhere on time. As those of you who heard me speak last year already know, I write for the national magazines. I write for Women's Day, Family Circle, Parents, Fitness, More, Oprah, and it's the Oprah thing that I'm going to get to in just a second. But I wanted to give you my tips first, so that if I run out of time, you didn't get cheated. First, marry someone with health insurance. Second, pay attention. The best stories come out of your own life. If you're taking care of an aging parent, two teenagers, and a Labrador with hip dysplasia, it's happening somewhere else and there's an audience for that story. So pay attention to your own life. I have a friend who says that every time you travel, you either have a great vacation or you get a great story. I look at dating the same way. Tip number three, help each other. Let other writers read your work. Listen when they tell you how to make it better. Give them the names of your editors. Tell them how much you are paid. Share. Tip number four, practice. Practice your craft. Get better at it. Select the perfect verb. Delete modifiers. Make your writing sing or crackle or pop off the page. Caress your sentences. Linger. Number five, persevere. As a professional, full-time freelancer working at the national level, 80% of my story ideas get rejected. 80%. I come up with beautiful ideas, I craft a compelling query letter, I send it to the right editor, and they say, no thanks. The trick to surviving under those odds is to turn around and send that idea right back out to another editor. You have to persevere. So, tip number six, this is your bonus tip, and it leads right into my story. Be brave. So that's what I'm going to do right now. I want the women in the room, starting right here, to count off by fours.
One, two, three, four, five.
She's in my section, you can tell. Count off by fours. One.
One. Three. Four. One, two, three, four. One,
hurry up, you guys. We're all writers here, but we can count to four.
Four, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four,
one, two, three. She's in my section too. Wow. Now I want all of the number ones to stand up.
You're five.
Look around you. This is how many American women will be kicked, stabbed, beaten, or shot by the men they love. You may sit down. One out of four American women, and I'm one of them. My boyfriend broke my ribs, he blackened my eyes, he crushed my nose, and he raped me. And like most women, I told no one. A few years later, my sister Amy wrote a letter, and she addressed it to the local sheriff's office. She taped it to the inside of her desk at work. It said, "If I am missing or dead, pick up Ron Ball." Ron Ball was her live-in boyfriend, and 10 weeks later, he strangled her with his bare hands, wrapped her in a painter's tarp, tied her with speaker wire, and buried her in a shallow grave. She was in fear all of that time, and she didn't tell anyone, and I realized at that point the dangers of staying silent. So I wrote an essay that ran in the October issue of Oprah's magazine, because I wanted to get people talking to their daughters, to their friends, to their sisters, to their mothers, in the hopes that someday there would be no more Amy's. After last year's Right by the Lake, I went home and I did something brave. So there's one of my points. I wrote a book proposal on the same subject. A nonfiction book proposal is a sales document. It says, here's the product, here's the competition, here's why my book is better than the competition, here's how we will market it, here's how well the competition sold. I sent my book proposal, to a few of my key friends, and they made it better. And then I sent it to four agents. Two I knew through my professional organization, the American Society of Journalists and Authors. One I had met briefly at a conference, and I loved him. I loved his energy, his dedication, his eye contact, and most of all, I loved his book list. He had sold some really, really beautiful books. The fourth I found when I was studying the competition. I'd read a wonderful memoir named Sickened by an author by the name of Julie Gregory, and in her acknowledgments, she was gushing about how wonderful her agent was. So I sent my book proposal to her too, and she wrote back and said that she was in the middle of several projects, but she'd get back to me within a month. The first two agents called me back within hours, literally hours. "I want to represent this book," they both said. Now, the sad truth of it is, the reason they want to represent it is because it resonates with so many women. You know, that's why they want to run this book. Okay, keep in mind that it doesn't happen. Writers beg agents to represent them. You send it out and you send it out and you find out about these famous people who have wonderful books who had to send it to 60 agents before they could get represented. So my story is unusual. And if this doesn't happen to you, go back to that one point I said, persevere. Okay, as soon as I had two agents interested, I knew my book was going to be published. Spend a moment with that thought. My book was going to be published. Anything after that was hoopla. I knew no agent was going to jump on board unless they knew a publisher was going to take it. So I knew from that point that this was really going to happen. Okay, so the third agent, the man, he wrote back that while it was a worthy project, no acquisitions editor came immediately to mind, so he'd have to pass, best of luck, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I'm an incredibly patient woman, and so I sent the fourth agent an email that basically said, this train is leaving the station, and if you want to get on board, now would be the time. Only it was nicer than that. Within 24 hours, she called, and she emailed, and she called my cell phone. "I want it," she said. So we talked. And she enthused about it, and she told me how she sold Julie Gregory's book. And she told me that Julie's book made number one on the London Times bestsellers list. And she told me that Julie's publisher would want my book. And she told me that Julie would write the foreword if there was a British edition. I selected her. A week later, agent number three, the man, sent me an email. "I finally got around to reading your proposal. Please tell me I'm not too late." So I was 4 for 4. And I'm glad he said no at first, because I would have had to pick between him and Katie Boyle, who is my agent. And I adore Katie Boyle, and so I'm glad that I didn't have to second-guess myself. Katie Boyle coached me through polishing the proposal, and then she called 19 publishing houses. 18 of them asked to see the proposal. 12 of them said they were interested, which meant we were going to auction. Again, this doesn't happen. An auction, as I'm sure you know, is when you pit one house against another house, just like any other kind of auction. You want to see who's going to come in with the most dedication, the most money, and the best publicity plan. Okay, if we can back up again, my book was going to be published. Yeah. I wanted this message out. I wanted this conversation started. Whatever it took to make it happen, I was willing to do. And now I had all these publishing houses behind me, and they wanted to get the message out also. But I also knew that the more a publishing house invested in my book, the more it would be promoted. And so, the story continues. We got a call from London. Random House wanted to buy the UK rights. That meant everything within the United Kingdom would be serviced by Random House, provided I'd be willing to fly to England to do promotion. No problem. So the United Kingdom was off the table before the auction even started. Then, about a week before the scheduled auction, one of the publishing houses came in with what is called a preemptive bid. They would pay $100,000 for the book. Yeah, that's what I said. They would promote it. They would buy space in the front of every bookstore. It would be as ubiquitous as A Million Little Pieces, which now isn't such a good precedent. They would promote it like Lovely Bones, if you guys remember that, Alice Siebold? Siebold. They would send excerpts to every major magazine. They would get me on the talk shows. I said no. There was a pause. My agent said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes. Let's go to auction and let's put their bid as the floor to the auction." So there's that brave thing I was talking about. I'm guessing that those of you who have seen me all week understand that I'm not a materialistic person. I'm not greedy, I don't live large, I don't drive the big car. I live simply by choice. But I wanted so much money behind this book that they could not fail to promote it. I want everybody in the world talking about domestic violence. You know, in the early 20s, people were dying of AIDS, and family members were lying. They were saying that their children had died of natural causes, that their children had cancer. They weren't saying they had AIDS. And then Randy Schiltz wrote the book, And the Band Played On. And he made the cover of every magazine, and he got on every talk show. And pretty soon, parents were marching in the streets saying that society had to address this thing that was killing their children. I want to do that for domestic violence. Thank you. Okay, so in the publishing world, the big houses like Simon & Schuster and Random House have divisions. And in some houses, those divisions are not allowed to bid against each other on a book. That'd be like you and your husband bidding against each other on a, you know, nice chair. She's probably in my workshop, too. So on the day of my auction, my agent called. We were down to only 8 editors. And here's how it went. My agent opened their bids. It was 6 o'clock in the morning in California and 9 o'clock in New York. She called the lowest bid and told her the number on the highest bid. "Do you want to top it?" she asked. She did. So she called the new lowest bid and gave her the new highest. "Do you want to top it?" She did. So she called the next lowest. This went on all day. My phone would ring. She'd say, "Mary Sue just went up 5. I'd say, "Which one is Mary Sue?" She'd call again. "Catherine just went up 10. Which one is Catherine?" No idea who these people were. On and on. Meanwhile, I was packing. The guy I was dating was lived in another town, so I was flying up the next morning to celebrate with him. There was going to be champagne. There was going to be much hoopla. Still, the auction continued. Up 5, up 10. By bedtime, it hadn't closed. There were still 4 houses in play. Celebrate, my agent said. Right. Remember, I'm still thinking, my book is going to be published. That's all I cared about. It's going to be published, and people are going to read it, and lives are going to change. That's all I wanted, to save someone, because I hadn't saved my sister. The next morning, someone raised the bid by a chunk of money, and 2 more houses dropped out, so now we were down to 2. I got on the plane. I flew. I got off the plane and called my agent. They're up by 10. I got on another plane. I flew. I got off. I called my agent. They're up by 5. And so it went for 2 whole days until I was on the plane coming back, and one of the houses blinked, and my book was sold. You'd think that'd be the end of it, but it wasn't, because my agent had to negotiate all this stuff with the houses, and it turned out one of the things she had to negotiate, and it took 6 weeks of me having quit my day job, 6 weeks of me running up the credit cards, because they were fighting over who got India. As you can imagine, my reaction to that was, they're going to publish my book in India? Okay, now I have to write the book. Actually, the truth is because I've got a couple more minutes, I'm going to tell you how I'm writing the book. I'm writing 1,000 words a day. I go to my coffee shop where there are all these mismatched chairs and mismatched people, and the owner is cranky, 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 and I put a folding chair in front of my chair, and I put my laptop on my folding chair, and I go into my zone, which the owner of the coffee shop refers to as the dark place. So I will go up to him and I will say, the salsa music is not working for me. Can you put on the blues? And he'll say, just because you want to go to the dark place doesn't mean all my customers want to go to the dark place. Yeah. And then he'll change the music. There's also a mentally handicapped woman who hangs out at the coffee shop, and her name is Hollywood. And Hollywood is not familiar with the concept of my bubble, your bubble. And so she will come in, I will be working on my laptop, and she will put her face between me and my screen, and my head goes snap back to the wall. Every single time she goes, hello, I'm Hollywood. And I come out of the dark place, and that's why I'm still sane. Because if I sat still and worked with this material all day, every day, I would be absolutely bonkers. This all happened, by the way, after I left Right by the Lake. It happened because I practiced my craft, because I sought help from my friends and colleagues, because I persevered, and because I was brave. There's one last tip I want to give you. Tell the truth.
What?
Tell the truth. It is our gift, it is our challenge, and it is our opportunity. Thank you. Canceled. I'm going to bed. Yes. Oh, really good point.
Proposed.
No, it's already chiseled. The title of my book, they've already done the cover design, is If I Am Missing or Dead. I didn't plant that question.
Does your saying apply to people who want to write screenplays and
absolutely. Persevere, share with your friends, practice your craft, be brave.
When's it going to be published?
It'll come.
Your
I don't think I can answer that because that's not something I've done yet. Sorry. The book is coming out worldwide in 2007. It'll be one of the spring releases next year. They've already taken my photo, and they make these promotional calendars. Stop that. Okay, I told my class a story, now I have to tell you guys. For the story that came out in Oprah's magazine, they sent down a team of 5 to glam me up enough for the photograph. It takes 5 people. There was celebrity photographer Len Irish. If you go to lenirish.com, he has this section called Celebrities, and he has a selection called Real People, and Menachem Begin is in the Real People category. They sent his assistant, Adam, I can't remember his last name. They sent a wardrobe consultant. Marshall, this has to be your doing.
Yeah, I sent you mine. Yeah.
No, 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 the little thing talking over here. Okay, so they sent this wardrobe consultant who brought 6 trunks of clothing. That thing was dancing.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So they sent 6 trunks of clothing. Now, the Barbie doll dresser did not know that the story was the story that it is. And so she brought provocative clothing.
Oh.
So we rifle through all these clothes and we go through this trunk and I'm going, you know, yes, no, yes, no, maybe, maybe, yes, no, no. And they take up just armloads of clothes. She has an assistant. In my bedroom, which they're New Yorkers, they're all walking around my apartment. How much do you pay for this? Ooh, nice closet space. Yeah. So we're in my bedroom and they say, put this on. And I said, are you going to stand there and watch? And they said, oh, come on, just take your clothes off. So I began doing this. And they would rip my clothes off and they would put new clothes on. And then I would go out and stand in front of the photographer who had read the story, so he knew what we were doing. And he would say, no, that one makes you look fat. That one makes you look busty. That one's too provocative. That color is horrible on you. Thank you. Your wife probably doesn't mind that you travel a lot, does she? And so it went until we finally found some outfits. But they had also brought, let's see, that'd be the photographer, the photographer's assistant, the wardrobe consultant. Ah, that's right. The makeup and hairstylist, who, when she got out of the car, said, oh, nobody told me about the hair. So anyway, when they were done with me, my eyelashes were so thick that when I opened them, it was like doing little eyeball aerobics. Up, down. And I turned around and I looked at my daughter, who is 7, and she said, oh, yuck, Mom. You look scary. Okay, so we had all those photographs to work with. I mean, you know, 2 days of photography to work with when we were looking for the promotional material stuff. And I turned down every single one of those photographs. And what they ended up using was a picture of me wearing precisely as much makeup as I'm wearing now, having spent exactly as much time on my hair as I did today, taken by my 7-year-old daughter. I actually get to go till 9:30, so if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. If Christine invites me back.
Oh, I think she will. How long did it take you to actually write the book then at 1,000 words a day?
In theory, I had to turn in 90,000 words. And so if you divide that by 5 days a week and you write 1,000, that's you know, whatever that is. And then that would be halfway through the time I had, and then I could spend the whole rest of the time rewriting, because it's in rewriting that the writing gets really good. But of course, I didn't write 1,000 words a day. Sometimes the weather was really nice. Sometimes it rained and I had to just take a nap. But anyway, I turned in half of my manuscript the week before I came here, and the rest of the book is due September 1st.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much did you give them? Because you spiced up so much interest. What did you exactly, what was the package proposal to the agent? What was in it?
That's a good question. She's asking what was in the book proposal. Let's see. Well, Oprah's name was in it. That pretty much is all that was in it. No. Okay, what it was, it was a description of the book. It was an excerpt from the book so that they could see what I was going to write. It was a marketing study comparing it to other memoirs out there. It was another excerpt from the book. Remember, these people are readers. You don't want to bore them, you want to entice them. It was a what I would do to promote the book, where we could promote it, who I thought the audience was. It was another excerpt from the book. And then attached to it was a copy of the Oprah article. In the real world, you have to write a sample chapter. But we were being brave, and so I wasn't going to write a sample chapter. And so I didn't write a sample chapter. About 2 weeks before the auction, the UK publisher and somebody else wanted to see a sample chapter, and my agent called, and she said, they want a sample chapter. And I said, okay. And she said, no, you're not getting it. You got to write the sample chapter before the auction. And I said, okay. I write for magazines, man. Give me a deadline, and I'll write. Otherwise, I just go eat ice cream. So I wrote the sample chapter, and that went out to all of the publishers, and I got word from the UK editor that that increased their bid.
Did you have an outline for the whole, that part of the proposal that you outlined?
Yeah, you're right. I did a synopsis, a chapter synopsis with the caveat.
It died again.
It died. With the caveat that I had no idea what I was going to write. It could look like this, though. That's what I wrote. Yes?
How many women did you interview?
This is only about a pair of sisters. The sisters appear to be substantially different. One is slim and highly educated and successful in her field and married to a doctor. And the other one is obese and hasn't finished college and is married to a guy who works in an auto parts store. And their lives look completely different, but what they're not telling each other is that they are both in controlling and abusive relationships. One of them breaks free and thrives, and the other one is murdered.
So it's a novel, it's not?
No, it's a true story. It's a memoir.
Oh, okay. Well,
it
doesn't sound like you.
It isn't anymore. Any other questions? Yeah.
Can you say any more about the craft of writing, your experience writing such pain? What balancing act did you have to do? Can you just talk about that? Other than Hollywood, the Hollywood has helped, which is the story being out of it, but I'd love to hear.
It's really difficult to do the craft. But my writing style is really spare. I do everything I can to step out of the story and let you experience it as you would experience it. So I leave my emotions out of it. I don't talk about how I feel. I don't use words like, sadly, she went back. I just say, she went back. And you can decide for yourself whether that's sad or unfortunate or fortunate. And all of you can do that in your own writing, is take yourself out of the writing and let your reader experience it for himself or herself, just starkly. For me, what happened was I wrote a bunch of scenes. If you guys have ever done anything like an Amherst Writers and Artists Workshop where you write to cues, I'm sure you're writing to cues this week, except for the people in my class, I would look at a photograph and I would write a scene. I would flesh that scene out, and if you had this right here happening, I would stretch it. I would just taffy it out, and I would draw the five things that came up to this and the five things after that, and with that create my narrative arc, if that makes sense. So I would pull my stories apart and write them with as much texture and detail as I could, understanding that I was going to pull a lot of it out of it later. I was going to edit it out. My class has heard me say this, and you guys have all heard this, but Michelangelo, when asked about David, said, "I chipped away all that wasn't David." So that's what I did, is I wrote big, and then I distilled it down to its parts. And then I took all of these scenes, and I gave them slugs. You know, this one is trip to Florida, this one is flying to identify the body, and I put them on 3x5 cards, and then I made this timeline on a bulletin board, you know, childhood, early adulthood, marriage, da da da. And I took my little 3x5s and I moved them around, and then I thumbtacked them up there. And then I wrote the skateboard ramps that take you from one scene to the next. And I tried to find the emotional balance so that you're not being beaten all the time, which is probably an unfortunate choice of words, and so that you can breathe in between, you can sigh. Being in an abusive marriage is like this. You're walking down the hall. 2 days a week, somebody steps out and punches you in the gut. You never know which 2 days it's going to be, but hey, you had 5 good days. The book reads like that. You're fine, you're fine, you're fine, and then wham. That's how I'm writing my book. Does that answer the question? Sure.